This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A new climate assessment report from the White House forecasts devastating economic and health effects for the United States. 13 federal agencies and the U.S. Global Change Research Program issued the report. It's required by Congress every 4 years. So what does it say about how climate change will affect North Carolina? Will Michaels is looking into this. He's WNC's Daily News producer. Welcome, Will.
Hey, Frank.
Give us some of the highlights of this report, will you?
Sure. Well, the introduction, actually the first sentence of the report, I think gives a good overview. It says, Earth's climate is now changing faster than at any point in the history of modern civilization, primarily as a result of human activities. So getting at that idea that humans really are responsible for the changing climates across the globe. One of the things that it gets to is the two things that we associate with climate change most often, sea level rise and average global temperatures rising. What it says about that specifically is that there is this range of how global temperatures will continue to rise over the next before the end of the century. And it's a range of between 1 and 9 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's, of course, based on what we do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions over that time. So there is quite a broad range there, but a lot of things can happen policy wise. It also talks about the sea level rise. It indicates that it has risen 7 to 8 inches since 1900, and it is expected to rise. And a huge chunk of that has happened in the past 25 years. But it also really goes beyond those two things. This is really one of the more comprehensive climate assessments that is out there. And it talks about, for instance, the labor hours that are anticipated to be lost, about 500 million labor hours lost by the end of the century because of that rising global temperature. The fact that workers who are outdoors, like farm workers, will have to take more breaks and we will lose those labor hours, which of course, translates to tens of billions of dollars or even more, depending on kind of where you sit. But it also has implications. So it has implications for the economy, but it also has implications for public health. Air quality will be affected, for instance. So people who have asthma or allergies will be more affected. More waterborne illnesses will be exposed simply because they can thrive in warmer temperatures. So it really is a comprehensive look.
Even those lost productivity hours as workers find it more difficult to work outside, that will also have health implications. So you can see this really does take a little deeper dive. What about North Carolina? Certainly we're on the coast, so we're we're on the front lines when it comes to climate change. What did it say about North Carolina?
Well, it didn't get to a state-by-state assessment, but it does have chapters on regions of the United States. About halfway through this massive report is a chapter on the Southeast. And it says, I thought it interesting, one of the first things that it says in that chapter is the number of extreme rainfall events is increasing. And I think anyone who has lived in North Carolina, especially in the last 2 years, will say, well, yeah, that sounds about right. Governor Roy Cooper has pointed out that since 2016, Hurricane Matthew up to Hurricane Florence this year, those are two what were supposed to be about 500-year flooding events happening in the course of 2 years. So that's pretty evident there. The Southeast will also be hit extra hard by those rising temperatures. That economic impact that I was talking about because of the lost labor hours is expected to have about a third of that is going to come from the Southeast. And as we well know, Central and Eastern North Carolina are covered in farmland. There is a lot of implications there, but the western part of the state could also be affected. If you remember in 2016 as well, there were some really damaging wildfires in the western part of the state. And basically what this report says is those highs will be higher and the lows will be lower, meaning that the high waters, the floods, are going to be worse, but the low waters, the droughts, are also going to be worse.
So we've known about this for a while. This report certainly adds some exquisite detail to something that we've already known. And as you say, it takes a deeper dive and explores areas that had been not quite as well plumbed. But we have known about this for a while, and it raises the question, what do you do about it? Let's take a look at what our legislature has been doing about it. In terms of reporting, the legislature has really tried to tamp down and dampen this kind of reporting in reporting on sea level rise, for instance. Talk more about that.
Yeah, this got a lot of attention in 2010 to 2012. In 2010, there was a science panel that was commissioned by the North Carolina Cultural rather Coastal Resources Commission, it released a report about sea level rise in North Carolina to the end of the century and said that the state could expect about a little bit less than 40 inches of sea level rise during that time. That got a lot of attention, of course, and it got a lot of attention from business leaders, public officials, county managers, looking at that and saying, well, that's not a very good outlook for us, people who are interested in economic development. There was some lobbying against this report, and it kind of worked because in 2012, the legislature passed a 4-year moratorium on new policy related to sea level rise. So it is worth pointing out that this report was specifically about sea level rise and not necessarily the other things that are connected to climate change. But so there is that history. I mean, that's a good example of how politics can play into this conversation. But most recently, Governor Roy Cooper also signed an executive order that mandated that the state should reduce its greenhouse gas emissions by 40% over the next 7 years. Now, that is bold by environmentalist standards and realistic to some extent because there are some benchmarks, including bringing more electric vehicles to the roads and integrating this policy into his own agencies like the Department of Transportation or all of his cabinet agencies really have to take this into account now when they are pursuing their own policies.
And it is aggressive, as you pointed out. How much of this is within his authority? Because the legislature has obviously been going in the opposite direction when it comes to adapting to or mitigating climate change. So can he do this, or does he need legislative authority to do some of what he's ordered here?
Well, he can and he can't. And to be clear about that, what he can do and what he's trying to do, I think, in this executive order is really get all of his cabinet agencies on board. He does have authority over those. So he can say to the Department of Transportation, for instance, I want you to pursue a policy that will help bring more electric vehicles on the road. Now, as you point out, the legislature really has to get involved in order for a lot of those things to happen. So I think it is, from what I've heard from climate scientists anyway, it is realistic, but he can't do it on his own.
All right. Will Michaels, WNC Daily News reporter. Well, it is one thing to forecast disaster and quite another to prepare for it. Jessica Whitehead specializes in helping communities adapt to the changes brought on by climate change. She is the coastal hazard specialist for North Carolina Sea Grant. Jessica, welcome. Good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much, Frank.
Now, talk a little bit more about this because we talked about this at the state level. Certainly, we're looking at this at the federal level as well. But local municipalities are really on the front lines, and they're the ones who have to be first responders in a way. What's happening out there?
Absolutely. So we've been working for a number of years with several places. Most recently, we've been in the town of Swansboro, but also town of Nags Head. In the past, I've worked in places like Hyde County and Moorhead City, some of those looking a little bit more at storm surge, but really beginning to look at what do these changes mean for a place. One of the things that is really great about the NCA 4 report, the National Climate Assessment 4th report, is that it makes it very, very clear that states and local governments, so municipalities and counties, are really on the front line of where these impacts are. And it's a challenge because there's no single silver bullet policy that says this is how you adapt to this. The impacts of climate change look different on the ground from place to place. And the people from place to place are different. And so adaptation needs to take on a different flavor as well.
Well, and I think that's the thing. When we think about climate change and what we should do about it, the first thing we think about is mitigation. And
right.
We don't think that Nags Head can do much about that. But there is resilience and adaptation, and that's where they're on the front line. So what kind of approach, what's your role in this, and how are these communities responding? Are they ready for this?
Sure. So a little bit of a primer for folks who are not familiar with North Carolina Sea Grant. We are partially funded by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, but then matched by the UNC system. So I have an extension appointment. My job is to provide technical capacity on weather, climate, emergency management, disaster recovery, disaster resilience to our coastal communities in North Carolina. I'm really sort of have a unique background in that I've trained both as a physical scientist in physics and meteorology, as well as a social scientist in geography. So I really specialize. I describe myself sort of facetiously as a climate concierge. What I really do is, there's a lot of information out there. I think, the NCA4 report itself is something over 1,600 pages. That's a lot of useful information, but it takes a lot to get useful information to the point where it is usable and it actually gets used.
Well, what do you do when you go into communities? It's interesting because this has become politicized. Mm-hmm. Even the data is now sort of challenged. And it can be difficult for people to live in those communities, particularly if they keep hearing, you should move, right? Mm-hmm. And then you come to town from Raleigh. How does that conversation begin? And how open are people to talk about resilience rather than mitigation or whatever, however the conversation goes?
Well, mostly I start by listening. I am always extremely conscious that I am walking in the door as the lady in loafers from Raleigh. And everybody along the coast who's listening now is probably chuckling because they've heard me say that. But really, I think it's about listening to communities first. People do want to be heard, and people want to know that you're hearing what they're seeing and that you're hearing what they value. And usually when we go into a community, the first thing that we do is we sit down with whoever's invited us in. I don't do a lot of knocking on doors and saying, you should plan for climate change. That goes over like a lead balloon. But in communities like Town of Nag's Head and Swansboro that have come to us and say, we need help with this problem, the first thing that I do is sit down and listen. I'm talking to the town engineer, to the town manager, to the planner. I work a lot with long-term planning. To people involved with public works, the real nuts and bolts of what does this mean for your place. And I do a lot of listening, a lot of interviewing. From there, I get a lot of conversations started. We use a lot of public meetings, very technical type oriented focus groups that we support with some actual even mental modeling of if this happens in your place, if it is storm surge, if it is rising groundwater table, what does this mean for you? And what are the values that you want to preserve in your community going forward? What makes you Nag's Head? What makes you Swansboro?
Well, let's hear how that conversation played out in Nag's Head. Holly White joins our conversation now. She is the principal planner for the town of Nag's Head. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Yeah, tell us a little more about how this process worked, particularly with regard to Nag's Head. What kind of conversations are actually going on there now with regard to climate change and the effects on Nag's Head in particular?
Okay. We have been working with North Carolina Sea Grant. They've been a key partner in this process, and the mental modeling that Dr. Whitehead just mentioned was an important part of the conversation that we were having. It allowed people to bring their concerns to the table and really think through how will this affect us and what are we going to do about sea level rise or any coastal hazard for that matter. And this mental modeling process, the VCAPS, allowed us to gain feedback from the public, but it also allowed us to educate people on the science of sea level rise so that we could make informed scientific decisions. And that's an important component. From that, we were able to take this community input through the VCAPS process and incorporate that into our long-range planning process for our comprehensive plan. And through that, we were able to adopt policy on sea level rise.
Well, tell us about that. What policies have you adopted?
We have a policy in our recently adopted comprehensive plan. It's a very broad policy that simply states to minimize the impacts of future sea level rise. And there are action steps that the town will follow up on in the next 10 to 20 years to address sea level rise and become more resilient. And that starts with something as simple as just determining how we are vulnerable.
But do you have, does anything change? Are there any policy changes now that result directly from these conversations, apart from recognizing that you must do something?
Yes. So this policy, the recognition of sea level rise and coastal resiliency in our comprehensive plan, this was a first-time component of the plan. And in northeastern North Carolina, I think we would be the first community to adopt policy on sea level rise. So we've, in the past, undergone a lot of land use planning and looking at environmental conditions and coastal hazards and how we respond to those things. But this was the first time in a long-range plan that we've addressed sea level rise and how we adapt to that.
And tell us specifically how. What changed? For instance, septic systems, right?
Yes. So I think that there's a long, out of the VCAPS process, one of the key community concerns and priorities that came out of that process was to maintain and continue our septic health initiative. That septic health initiative was established in 2000. It's a long-running program. It was born out of a concern for water quality. And as we think about how sea level rise will impact the Outer Banks long-term, many people think about sea level rise being water over land, but we're observing that groundwater is rising in the town. And so how we think about long-term, how groundwater will affect the functionality of those systems. So that maintaining and expanding that septic health initiative, and that offers free inspections and low-interest loans for repair for people's septic system in the town, that was the number one priority coming out of our VCAPS process, and that is also an action step contained in our comprehensive plan.
Jessica Whitehead, as you travel around a little bit, what are some of the other options that communities explore and have available to them?
Sure. Well, I think the first point that I want to make is that a lot of people think that adaptation is you read the report and you do something. I've read this. You should do something and have it passed and implemented right now. There are actually a lot of people who have solely focused on physical science in their careers who take that approach. The reality, and this is something that I've sort of had to learn the hard way and from working very intensely with people like Holly, is that really it's you have the information, you have a decision, and then you have to figure out how you get there. Now, Will mentioned, for example, the broad range of precipitation scenarios, for example, here that we have climate science producing us. All right, you need to do something. You need to make your stormwater system bigger. Okay, well, how much bigger? How much bigger does the pipe need to be? What's the right menu for you of green infrastructure versus your more concrete infrastructure? What is the, you know, how much can you afford? Are you to a point where you can really prepare yourself for the worst case scenario, or do you have to create a system where you say, all right, we've made this as good as we can get it, and then we prepare for some failure in the larger events? And so this is a really complex process. You've got to look at the economics. You've got to look at the characteristics of the place. Who owns the land? Which easements do you need to get? And it gets pretty messy pretty fast.
You know, but what's interesting about this is when you bring people to the table, and it's not just checking your Twitter feed about climate change and getting involved in whatever polarized conversation you may have been engaged in. If you sit down and say, how much more is this going to cost me in my taxes? That might bring anybody to the conclusion that maybe we should do something about climate change that may not have been there. I mean, have you seen that kind of thing happen where you're scratching your head saying, how did we get here and how do we change it?
We certainly have seen that. I mean, Holly, I think it came up with a couple of folks in the number of both public meetings and, you know, the community in town of Nag's Head and in Swansboro. You know, at some point we really do need to say, we're not going to be able to, especially if you're a small community, mitigate the worst case scenarios. We just can't.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being on the program. We talked to Will Michaels, a WNC Daily News reporter. Holly White is the principal planner for the town of Nag's Head. Jessica Whitehead is a coastal hazard specialist for North Carolina Sea Grant. Thank you for being on the program. And also, you can check out all this information and links to the report at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, we will learn about a new production that interrogates the definition of a hero. Stay tuned.